VOLS, the Vol signs, the iconic Vol sign that sat atop Neyland Stadium for decades. It's not been there since 1999, but could it be coming back? We'll discuss on a Monday show.
You are Locked On Vols, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody, and welcome into a Monday edition of Locked On Vols. I'm your host, Eric Kane, and so glad to have you guys along for the ride. Really, really do appreciate you guys for hanging out with me today, and boy, do we have a whole lot to talk about. Tennessee baseball wins the Knoxville Regional, but not without some dramatics, both on Saturday and on Sunday, to get past both Campbell and Georgia Tech and to move on to Super Regionals, where it will now host the winner of the Statesboro Regional, which is Notre Dame. We'll break down all of that here in Segment 1. Savion Williams, a new commit for Tennessee football. We'll touch on that. The Vols letters, are they returning? And what can Lindsey Nelson Stadium look like with the new renovations? We are loaded up here on a show. And, of course, I'm Eric Kane, your host here at Locked On Vols. If you're new to the show, appreciate you guys for coming to hang out. This is your go-to Tennessee Volunteers podcast each and every weekday morning when you wake up on YouTube or wherever you find your podcast. And we do this thing called Twitter Tuesday each and every Tuesday. So what that means is, @_Kaner, @LockedOnVols, tweet me, DM me, anything you guys have questions on, anything at all, we'll answer it tomorrow on the show for Twitter Tuesday. So, a fun show ahead. Knoxville Regional. I know a lot of you guys are sitting on the edge of your seats, both again Saturday night and Sunday. And at the time of this recording, you guys know I'll record it the night before, scheduled for just after midnight. It is 10:59 p.m. Your boy has to get up at just before 5 a.m., so it's reminiscent of 9 o'clock Eastern time tip-off times for basketball season. You guys know we're not fans of that, but it was worth it, right? I mean, a fun show, or fun game, rather. Tennessee, for the second straight night, was down 4-0 early on. Through four, it was 4-0 Georgia Tech. Tennessee comes back and scores two runs in the top of the fifth inning. I say top of the fifth inning because, you know, because the NCAA in its infinite wisdom has Tennessee, you know, the hosting team for the regional, the number one team in America. Yeah, it has Tennessee being the away team. Just so stupid. Luke Lipsius, he drove in another run by reaching on an error by the first baseman, and Evan Russell was able to come around and score that unearned run. Vols out another one in the top of the fifth inning when Jordan Beck grounds out to the third baseman, bringing in Cortland Lawson. So Tennessee cuts the deficit to two runs at 4-2. And then Tennessee cracks another one across home plate in the top of the seventh inning. Trey Lipscomb singles to right field where Jordan Beck moves across. And actually, no, it was Luke Lipsius who comes in to score. So it is 4-3 entering the top of the ninth inning. Top of the ninth inning, Tennessee trails 4-3. And this game gets absolutely drunk in the ninth inning. The Volunteers don't score one, don't score two, don't score three. They score six runs in the top of the ninth inning. Georgia Tech scores two runs to make it very interesting with the tying run at the plate with the final out scored. And ultimately, Tennessee wins 9-6. Let's go back to that top of the ninth inning. I'll tell you how he did it. Jordan Beck, we're going to hear from him right here from John Wilkerson. Jordan Beck ties the game with a double to center field. Take it away, John Wilkerson of the Ball Radio Network.
Pitch driven in the air into center field. Ranging back, and it's over the center fielder's head! Over the center fielder's head! Booker will race around third, he'll score! It'll be a double, an RBI double for Jordan Beck! Tennessee has tied the game! Look, Lipsius, the go-ahead run at third! Jordan Beck comes through big time for the Big Orange! His second run batted in on the night! His 56th on the season! Tennessee has caught the Yellow Jackets at four! And the Big Orange plays for the lead. Way to go, Jordan Beck.
Two batters later, Trey Lipscomb enters the dish, and the bases are loaded. He is hit by a pitch, so Tennessee takes the lead officially over Georgia Tech with a hit by pitch to go up 5-4. A couple batters later, Christian Moore comes on as a pinch hitter, just as he did Saturday night where he came through, and he comes through again. A two-run single from the true freshman puts Tennessee on top by three runs. Let's listen to John Wilkerson again.
Three balls, two strikes, one out. Payoff pitch. Lined into left field, base hit for the Big Orange. Drew Gilbert will score. Here comes Trey Lipscomb. He'll score. Christian Moore has done it again, my friends. A two-run single for the Volunteer freshman. and Tennessee leads 7-4. Runs batted in 35 and 36. Ortega stops at second. Simo, the runner at first. It's a four-run ninth for the second straight night. And it's Tennessee 7, the Yellow Jackets 4, with one out and four on the board for Tennessee.
Well, just for good measure, Evan Russell, who's back in the lineup, in the starting lineup, singled in another run there in the top of the ninth inning before Cortland Lawson, sacrifice fly, brought in one more, and Tennessee scored six runs in the top of the ninth inning, led 9-4 heading to the bottom half of the frame. And Georgia Tech would not go lightly. Redmond Walsh on to close it out, and Georgia Tech was able to bring in one run, a two-run single from Trey Borden, but that was all she wrote. Redmond Walsh comes in with a big strikeout there to end the game, and Tennessee holds on to win 9-6. All right, so for the second straight year, Tennessee advances on to the Super Regionals, now just two wins away from advancing on to the College World Series in back-to-back years. Obviously, that has not happened in quite some time, if ever. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not sure if Tennessee's ever advanced on to College World Series in consecutive years ever. I'll have to do some digging on that. But I'm literally just, you know, in real time, moments past when that game was just over. Notre Dame won the Statesboro region. And so now Tennessee will take on Notre Dame next weekend in Knoxville for the best of a three-game set. And the winner of that three-game series will advance on to Omaha. You just need two wins. So it's just going to be like a weekend series. But again, if Tennessee wins Friday and Saturday, it's all she wrote. You just need two wins to advance on to Omaha. And Notre Dame, who really should have been a host site, it's a really, really good team, is coming to Knoxville and will take on the Volunteers. So how do we get here? Friday night, Tennessee started off a little slow, but ultimately the bats came on late, and it was 10-0 the final. Blake Tidwell pitched an absolute gem to get Tennessee off and running, 10-0 that final score. Saturday, the SEC Pitcher of the Year, Chase Dolander, got chased after two innings and two-thirds. He had 70 pitches, and in came in the mustache, Kirby Connell, and he pitched, I believe, four innings, and he pitched career highs and pitches and innings pitch and all that. He gave up two runs late, but ultimately he saved Tennessee's bullpen, and he was the hero for Saturday as the bats came on late. Drew Gilbert, a monster three-run home run. Blake Burst got into the action with a Burke blast. Christian Moore had a two-run single, I believe, in that game as well. And Tennessee came on to win 12-7 over the pesky Fighting Camels, right? The Campbell Fighting Camels, and they were fantastic. Campbell's a good baseball team. And Georgia Tech, I'll give them credit. I've been downing them all weekend. I downed them all last week whenever we were previewing this. Georgia Tech has no pitching. And by God, if they didn't get a career night from Zach Maxwell. Absolutely incredible. This guy, who came into the game with a 5.6 ERA, this guy was in the starting rotation earlier in the year, but just wouldn't find the strike zone. They had to put him in the bullpen, and they had no pitchers available, essentially. And they brought in this Maxwell guy who was like Lurch. He's like 6'5", 240 pounds, a weirdo. If your parents are listening to this, I do apologize. You had a hell of a game. But this guy comes in and shuts Tennessee down five innings, giving up two unearned runs. Excuse me, six innings, giving up two unearned runs off five hits. He walks five, but he strikes out 11 Volunteers. A career outing from Maxwell. And I was texting a buddy. I was like, listen, Tennessee has proved, you know, throughout his time, throughout the season, but in Hoover especially, and last night, and really Friday night, really since Hoover and the Knoxville Regional, this Tennessee team has been kind of late blossoming at the plate, rather. They've been coming on strong at the plate as the game's gone on. So I was like, Tennessee just needs to get this Maxwell guy out of the game, and Tennessee will come back and find a way to win. Lo and behold, Tennessee did that, but gosh, it waited till the ninth inning to do it. So the number one team in America, continuing to show why it is the number one team in America. By the way, too, that home plate umpire was straight garbage. Oh, my God. And again, I say this. I am very, very close with some officials that call games at the high school level, who have called games in the SEC, who have called games in the ACC. It is a tough job. I would never, ever, ever want to do it in my life. So I say all this with a grain of salt. But that home plate umpire, oh, my God, did he have a horrible game. Both sides, too. That Will Mabry's, Redmond Walsh's last strike there to end the game was not a strike. It was not a strike. That strike three call that rung up, who was it? Was it Beck? It was early in the game. I can't remember. Whenever Tennessee had a couple of runners in scoring position, was just atrocious. Was not a strike three call. At one point in time, Tennessee was like 7 of 20 with runners on. And I'll find the stat right here. Tennessee at one point in time was 2 for 20 with runners on entering the ninth inning, 2 of 15 with runners in scoring position, and 1 of 7 with 2 outs. Tennessee's bats came on late, and they won it in dramatic fashion. Moves on, wins 9-6 over Georgia Tech, who was fighting for its life. If Tennessee were to lose that game, they would have played today at about noon for winner-take-it-all Game 7 of the Knoxville Regional, but it doesn't need that. Tennessee now advances on, will host Notre Dame for the Knoxville host side of the Super Regional. So that was a whole lot of fun. That was fun hearing from John Wilkerson as well, audio courtesy of the Vol Radio Network, and we'll continue to break down Tennessee baseball all week long as it gets ready for Supers and hopefully as it advances on to the College World Series. Coming up, Tennessee football brought in some reinforcements on the offensive line heading to the 2022 season. I'll tell you what that's all about coming up here in a moment on Locked On Vols. But betonline.net, you guys know this. Man, I love playing the game on Sundays because it's NASCAR. You know, whether you do, you know, manufacturer, whether you do teams, stage winners, whatever the case may be, you know, numbers, anybody winning from 10 down or 10 up or 10 to 20, there's so many different props at betonline.net when it comes to NASCAR. And I played that all day on, I played the game all day on Sunday, and you can as well, but not just for obviously NASCAR. That's what I love to do on Sundays, but you guys can get in on that action for the NBA playoffs, for the NHL playoffs, for the College World Series. They have everything you can possibly imagine at betonline.net, but it's also the most guaranteed information for sports developments, news and odds, tons and tons that you can have information on your wagers, live bettings, esports, reality television, and a whole lot more. It's betonline.net where you can head on over to the website or use your mobile device to learn about the latest trends and all the action. Betonline.net, it is where the game starts. We'll go back into a Monday show. An important favor to ask you guys. I mentioned this a couple times last week, but we put together a survey so we can learn more about the listeners just like you and what makes your favorite Locked On podcast even better. It's an opportunity to tell us what you like and what you don't like about the podcast. You can go to LockedOnPodcast.com/survey right now to get started. It won't take very long, and everyone that completes the survey can qualify for a chance to win one of 10 $100 Ticketmaster gift cards. Go take your audience survey at LockedOnPodcast.com/survey. Thank you so much for your help, and remember to speak kindly of Locked On Vols. All right, so let's get into it. We have a football commit, and that took place late Thursday night. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I had already, you know, recorded, produced, scheduled all that stuff for the podcast on Thursday, and then at like 8 o'clock on Thursday night, I ended up having to turn a story really, really quick because there was a junior college offensive lineman that committed to the University of Tennessee. So I do apologize for not having that on Friday's show, but I wanted to make sure if you heard something about it, you weren't crazy. This is what was going on with the guy that Tennessee brought in. So his name is Savion Herring, all right? Savion Herring is a junior college offensive guard, offensive lineman from Monroe Community College. He is from New York, and he was originally a two-star prospect or three-star prospect out of high school who committed to Cincinnati in the class of 2020, but he ended up going to community college, to Monroe Community College, where he's been since the fall of 2020. Of course, that 2020 season got pushed back to 2021. He played this past season again, and he graduated in May, and he is committed to the University of Tennessee. All right, so he chose Tennessee over the likes of Missouri, Kansas, and Syracuse. I understand that's not a very, you know, high priority list. I'm not saying that Savion Herring is going to come in here and be a starter day one. I don't think that, but he does have 3 years of eligibility remaining. All right, he's about 6'5", about 315. He can play his home base is right guard. That's where he started for Monroe Community College, but he can play all five positions, including center. So immediately this guy comes in. He's going to be here for the summer term. I think he's arriving either today or maybe tomorrow. But he's going to be here, and he's going to be, you know, going through summer term, going through classes, going through workouts, and all that type of stuff. And at worst case scenario, that's a guy that can be extremely versatile, you know, for Tennessee in terms of being a swing man or in terms of being a guy that can play the interior, both guard positions, center. He can play some tackle and all that. You know, I'm not expecting him again to be an all-conference player. I don't know if he'll ever start here, but he does have 3 years of eligibility remaining, and he's got versatility on him. So he officially visited Tennessee, I want to say not this past weekend, obviously, the weekend before that, and went ahead and made his call on Thursday night. And, you know, we'll see what happens from him. I had the chance to catch up with him on Thursday night when I had to turn the story really, really quick. It was of allquest.com. Some of you guys might have read it, and it might have been the quickest story I've ever thrown up there. But here's some of the comments that he said to me when he committed to the University of Tennessee. Quote, "Tennessee feels like a great fit for me. Seeing the facilities and seeing how the coaches trust the players and how the players interact with the coaches, it was all really, really great. The players told me that what you see in these coaches is what you're going to get from being around them all weekend long. It really was a great vibe. They were telling me their expectations, and it all made perfect sense to me." So that's, you know, one of the first things he said to me. He went on, he said on Glenn Ellerbe, "He is really good at demonstrating the plays to the guys. That's great for me. We went back and forth on some of the plays, and I understood them. He was throwing different things at me, and he was surprised at how well I remember the plays and the calls, simply because it was the first time that I had been seeing them. It was really all him because he's that great of a teacher." So one of the things that he liked about Glenn Ellerbe was his ability to teach, and you know, that was a sticking point for him. Another comment, a couple more here. He said to me, "He's great." In terms of Glenn Ellerbe, or Josh Heupel, excuse me. "He's really, really great. He has a great personality to him. You can feel comfortable around him, and obviously his offense is really, really good." And then finally, when I ask about his, you know, what he's going to bring to the table, he said, "Probably my toughness. It's probably my best attributes. I really have toughness to me. My IQ on the field is so good. I'm good at reading plays, and I'm very versatile. I feel like I am a great communicator." And so those were some of the comments that Savion Herring said to me on Thursday night. He tweeted out his commitment to the University of Tennessee and, you know, thanked a lot of his family, thanked a lot of his friends. Of course, it's been a journey for him. Remember, I mean, he was, you know, in 2020, that class was not a qualifier, had to go to the community college. He's been at Monroe Community College for quite some time. And then he went through this, you know, recruiting process again. And per his tweet, he says, "I want to thank God first and foremost and every coach that gave me an opportunity to play at their university. This process wasn't easy, but I made the best choice for me. I want to thank my Irvington family for being in my corner after all the moving on to JUCO. They showed me what the word family truly means. To my parents, I love you and appreciate the unconditional love and support that you have for me. With that being said, I'm committed to the University of Tennessee." And there was a bunch of different orange emojis. So Tennessee has some depth now on the offensive line, and the interior more so, now with a JUCO offensive line transfer, Savion Herring. And so I kind of looked out from left guard all the way over to right guard, kind of the depth pieces that Tennessee now has. And, of course, left to right at left guard, center, right guard, you've got Jerome Carvin, Cooper Mays, and Javonte Spraggins, who are your starters. You know, behind those guys, and remember, there's some different there's flexibility here. These guys can go and move around and play different positions. You know, Jerome Carvin, as we saw last year, would likely be the the backup center if need be, right? And so, you know, behind that first group, you've got Ollie Lane, you got Jackson Lampley that can play the guards, and then at center, Jerome Carvin, Ollie Lane, and, you know, Parker Ball. And then behind those guys, you have Kingston Harris, Addison Nichols, and now Savion Herring. And then, you know, you got Herring that can play center as well, William Parker that can play guard, Mo Clipper that can play guard, and potentially Dane Davis. You know, Dane Davis is a tackle right now, but there were some comments made back in spring to where, you know, Glenn Ellerbe and Alex Goller said that, you know, trying to find a spot for Dane Davis, he can help them inside. He's built to be a guard as well. He can play tackle, of course. That's probably, you know, where he can play the best at, but nonetheless, he can also, you know, potentially help out with inside at guard. So it looks like Tennessee's in a pretty good spot here in terms of some depth and what they've added, and we'll have to see exactly, you know, what happens in terms of the projection for Savion Herring. But he committed to the University of Tennessee on Thursday night, and He is expected to be in at the first of this week for summer school and to begin the new term. So we'll have to see exactly what he looks like in camp and if he can be a guy that Tennessee can depend on if they're in a crunch or for depth purposes. So wanted to get that out there for you guys. I'm sure you might have read my story. I'm sure you might have saw it from somebody else, another different publication. Sorry I didn't have it on Friday's show, but wanted to go ahead and get that into you. Savion Williams commits to the University of Tennessee from junior college. Monroe Community College. All right, coming up lastly here on Locked On Vols, the Vols lettering. Danny White teased it returning to Neyland Stadium. What are your thoughts on that and the renovations in Neyland Stadium, the renovations to Lindsey Nelson Stadium? Boy, do they look like it is going to be a top-flight facility. All that and more coming up here as we conclude a Monday show in just a moment. But first, guys, I want to remind you about Built Bar. Don't you just love the chewy battery brownie mix? What about the caramel brownie with the caramel swirl on top? So good. What if I told you can have all that with a chewy chocolate delicious plus 17 grams of protein? You're in luck because caramel brownie bars are available at Built.com right now, and you got to act fast because they're a fan favorite. They're going to go quick. Forget about the dessert. They're better than dessert. Plus, the macros are unreal. 130 calories, 17 grams of protein, only 4 grams of sugar. I would replace a regular brownie with Built Bar's caramel brownie bar in a heartbeat. The best parts, caramel brownie bars are covered in 100% real chocolate, like for real. With Built, you don't have to sacrifice tasty for healthy. You can do both. So go check out the caramel brownie bars and so many other bars at Built.com right now. And while you're there, put in LOCK15 to get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off. That's all at Built.com. All right, guys, welcome back for a final segment here of a Monday show. This is Locked On Vols, your go-to Tennessee Volunteers podcast each and every weekday morning on YouTube or wherever you find your podcasts. And don't forget, tomorrow's Twitter Tuesday action. Comments on the Knoxville Regional, questions, Tennessee football, recruiting, basketball, baseball, whatever you have. If you have any questions just for me, you can holler and send them to me. That is at Locked On Vols, at Locked On Vols on Twitter, and at _Kaner on Twitter as well. All right, so Danny White teased the return of the VOLS letters to Neyland Stadium, and I was very curious. I mean, obviously, I know they're a fan favorite, but I want to know how many of you guys, the listeners, and what you thought of the Vols letters on atop Neyland Stadium. And I know this doesn't speak for everybody here, but at Locked On Vols on Twitter on Sunday night, I put out a little tweet here, a little poll, and it said, "Hey, do we care about the Vols letters at Neyland Stadium?" A little over 300 votes, and overwhelmingly, 83% of the vote at the time of this recording said, yes, we do care about the VOLS letters atop Neyland Stadium. Only 17% said no. So, you know, I found that very, very interesting. I remember, you know, growing up and going to Tennessee games, and I guess some of those earlier games when I was a child, the letters were still there. But, I mean, guys, I might have been 4 or 5 when they were taken down. I think they were taken down in 1999. So the majority of my childhood that I remember, the majority of the Tennessee games that I've gone to, obviously, and the games that I cover now, do not involve that. So it's not very significant in my life and in terms of, you know, my fandom growing up or anything like that. But I'm not speaking for you guys, of course, and a lot of you guys listening are, you know, some of you guys are older than me, and it might ring true for you. But Danny White teased it on Twitter late last week, I guess it was Friday, with the VOLS letters spanning both sides of the Jumbotron in the south end zone. Now, the picture that Danny White tweeted out there were orange blocks with white letters. They've been in different placements. They've been in different, different colors in years past. The traditional ones, the ones that were wheeled out there at Gate 21 and whatnot this past season, were the white backgrounds with the orange letters VOLS. I thought that was pretty cool that Danny White made that happen and was able to, you know, put those out there so that fans can go and take pictures and whatnot. And that was pretty cool. There's some pictures back from, you know, the 70s and 80s where they're orange blocks with white letters. They've been in the south end zone. They've been on top of the Jumbotron before. At one point in time, I believe they even had underlines underneath the letters on the blocks. But per the renderings from Danny White, they are orange blocks with white letters, and they're going to go on both sides of the Jumbotron in the south end zone. Now, the new Jumbotron in the north end zone, they wouldn't fit on top of it just because it wouldn't be flush or anything like that from what we're hearing. But nonetheless, it looks like the VOLS are coming back. And what's intriguing now about those are with new LEDs and everything and the light shows, you can get really creative during the light shows whenever they run through the team or after Tennessee scores touchdowns. You know, you talk about you know, the VOLS chance, you can light those suckers up, I bet. I mean, that'd be really, really cool. I got to say that in terms of fan experience and game day atmosphere, that would be really, really cool to have that involved in the game plan so that it can be very interactive. So I'm intrigued to see what those will look like. But Danny White teased it. He teased it on late last week that they are going to return, and that's something that I think Tennessee fans have been after for a long time. So that's really, really cool. Another thing that Danny White put out there and the University of Tennessee put out there was renovations to Lindsey Nelson Stadium. Now, it looks really, really, really cool. I'm not going to lie. There's no date set in stone for when this will start. There's no date set in stone on when the project is set to be completed. But what we do know is that the University of Tennessee, it is an eyesore when you enter the gates. If you enter the main gates behind home plate, it is so ugly. And I'm sorry if that offends anybody listening right now or watching right now. I do apologize, but that is what it is. It is flat out disgusting. And it does not hold any type of weight compared to any other school around the SEC and certainly around the country. What Tony Vitello has done with this program, building it back up, obviously where it is right now, it's an eyesore. It's hard to recruit. You can't even bring recruits to the front door. I mean, seriously, it's that ugly. So there's been a whole lot of talk over the last couple of years about enhancements to be made to Lindsey Nelson Stadium and all that. And what University of Tennessee put out there on Friday looks really, really cool. Of note, it's going to feature new suites, an enhanced left field porch, extended seating down the left field line that will also feature four top tables, a large box seating place, and additional club seating. But most notably, it will have an indoor practice facility, a training facility complex out behind the right field wall. We've known that that's been a large topic of discussion. Tony Vitello wants something on the bottom floor and then maybe have dorms at the top for his baseball players. That would be really, really cool. So again, new suites, enhanced left field porch, extended seating down the left field line that will feature four top tables, a large box seating, and additional club seating. And if you go to utsports.com or volquest.com, we put a story up there on the front page. You can see some pictures of the renderings on what this might look like. Gosh, it looks really, really cool. So it might be a couple years before this is all said and done. In fact, I know it'll be a couple years. It's not like they can get all this done before next season, even if they started the day after the last home game. But nonetheless, it will look more modernized. It will look a whole lot better to where you can come and bring recruits. You can come, you know, donors and boosters and, a lot of people that donate money to the program and, of course, the administration. It'll be a really, really cool place to sit and watch one of the best baseball teams in America. So I wanted to bring that on there and say two thumbs up to the future, renovations at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. It'll be a couple years in my estimation. Again, I'm not doing the construction and I'm not in the know in terms of when these plans are set to be final, but I bet it'll be a couple years, but it will be worth the wait once it's finally done, because again, it's been neglected. Lindsey Nelson Stadium has been neglected for years, and it's well past time to fix that sucker up, especially to go along with the product that you're getting on the field right now from a coach who is really, really good. So some late news last week that I wanted to bring on the podcast here on Monday. Of course, Savion Williams, the VOLS letters going back on Neyland Stadium potentially. It's at least that's what it looks like. And then, of course, the Lindsey Nelson Stadium renovations that are coming here in the very near future to the baseball program. So all that and more, and I hope you guys enjoyed here this edition of Locked On Vols, talking about a Tennessee Knoxville regional victory and more. And don't forget, we will have Twitter Tuesday coming up on tomorrow's show. Plenty to get into your questions every single Tuesday. I will spend the entire show, if that's what it takes, talking about and answering your questions on Twitter Tuesday. Tennessee baseball, basketball, football, whatever the case may be, all that and more. So, as always, thank you so much for making Locked On Vols your first listen. And now for your second listen, Locked On NBA Big Board Podcast, all right? They give fans in-depth look on the biggest prospects, the latest player rankings, and, of course, the big boards. Follow Locked On NBA Big Board every single day on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you find your podcast. Monday's check. We'll come back and do it again on a Tuesday, guys. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Monday, everybody.